Oups. From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the lip.
Yes, good evening on this somewhat milder July evening. After the heat wave that has scorched most of the country on the third night of the Republican National Convention, and I believe the prospective vice president or the nominee for vice president is currently speaking, W. Gas, because it's hip in the lip. Hello.
Are you done? the heat it hasn't been that bad of a heat wave, at least.
Oh my god! Well, the last like day or so hasn't been bad, but for like a couple week period, it was brutal. Oh. Terrible.
Oh,
just terrible.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, for all of our listeners throughout the rest of the country, I'm
particularly in
Texas and Nevada.
Maybe it's worse there. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they're all saying a big F you. They've probably had that temperature back in
probably like March. Yeah, I was gonna say March.
So here we are. This is Hip in the Lip. We are a New York Islanders podcast in the middle of July. And last week we had a, you know, state of the off season episode, essentially walking through the additions, subtractions, and retained players on the roster. And we want to keep this going as we promised. And here we are, keeping it going. This is a shift in the paradigm where now we will delve into other New York sports topics. So our knowledges will be tested here to our listeners, as they have no idea of the depth of our familiarity of other of other New York sports teams.
Yeah, so if you feel a little rumble beneath you, no, that's not Mike Francesa getting out of bed. That is a shift in topic for Hip and the Lip. That is correct. We are going to be switching it up today. We'll do a little hockey, as the Hip will lay out for us, as he always does. But we will be getting into other sports. How about that? What do the Hip and the Lip know about anything else other than hockey? We'll find out.
Well, maybe we don't. Maybe we know nothing. But before we delve into the other sports, there is a little Islanders tidbit that I know you've just been dying to share.
What tidbit would that be? Oh, that's for me to – I see. Okay. Well, I mean, we ended off the last show with Ding Dong. The Wong is no longer majority owner, now minority owner. So that's right. He is out. Malkin and Ledecky are in. And the tidbit is that Mr. Ledecky had a little luncheon in, I guess, somewhere in Midtown Manhattan, I'm assuming, at the 21 Club or whatever. And he had, I guess, you know, a bunch of media members out to have a little Q&A session with him, you know, just to, I guess, you know, just address whatever questions or concerns that those in the media may have. And, you know, hey, we got a new owner in New York. Let's ask him some stuff. And that they did. And he came back with, I mean, and, you know, there were a few articles written by Mr. Staple on Newsday, Mr. Brooks in the Post, and, I mean, everything complimentary. I mean, everything that the members of the media took out of this meeting were positive. He came across as a guy, and, I mean, when you think of a sports owner, it doesn't matter in what sport, any sport, when you think of an owner, you think of you want two things from that owner, only two. You want him to spend money, and you want him to stay out of the operations for that team, for the sport. So whatever sport it may be, you want him not to be involved in the personnel decisions. You want him to sign off on checks, you know, give a thumbs up or thumbs down to a request for an increase in payroll, whatever. Of course, it's his money. That's his job. And that is his right. But all you want him to do is spend money and just stay out of it. You hire your front office guys, you have your hierarchy, your GM, your president, whatever, however you structure it. That's obviously up to him as well, as we, of course, know, just the way Charles Wong set it up. And Just those two things, and that will make you a good owner. That's all you have to do. And Ledecky basically came out and said that I will spend money. We're not going to have the purse strings held on too tightly like Mr. Wong did for 10 years there with the team with the Islanders, and just stay out of the personnel decisions. And he said he is going to do that. And I got to say, he came across as candid. He came across as very honest and sincere, not disingenuous like the last owner who, fed us a bunch of lies and nonsense that we came to learn was, all part of a facade for a hidden agenda that he had. And, obviously we'll learn more about this owner as we move along, into the years. But right now, everything seems good. Everything seems thumbs up in Islander land, at least. From an ownership perspective, we'll see what Garth does the rest of the offseason. But I got to say, I am very impressed with what I heard. He even addressed fan concerns. He said that the last couple of years, he went around to different arenas getting ideas, seeing what teams did things the right way or the way he thinks the way things should be done. He interacted with some fans, I guess masquerading as a random Islander fan that, hey, let me talk to the common folk, like on the subway platforms and other areas. So, I mean, everything that you heard from this guy, you really liked, and at least I really liked, and I think he is going to be a good owner. The other guy, Malkin, is apparently not going to be as involved in the day-to-day stuff like Ledecky will be, but so far, so good.
Ledecky has a storied past with sports ownership in general.
Going back to the Capitals.
1998, he purchased... Yeah. A share of the Reds.
I didn't know that. Okay.
He partnered with AOL executives to find this company, Lincoln Holdings, which purchased the Washington Capitals and a minor share of the Wizards. There's more. So, I guess he has some track record. I'm not familiar with it. I don't know if he has, if what he's saying now is consistent with his ownership approach in the past, but at least he satisfied you and said the right things.
He did.
Interesting. So you made a point how, Wong was tight with the money. So did the Islanders just have a severely, were they not close to the salary cap for many years?
No, they actually, I think I would probably have mentioned this on past shows. They actually used to circumvent the cap floor. Other teams were circumventing the cap ceiling because they wanted to win. And if you're going to try and win in any league, you have to spend money. The Islanders, Mr. Wong, did the complete opposite. He said after his lighthouse project was blown up, after the town of Hempstead, put a dagger in it and, basically chopped it to pieces and said, if you want to do it, this is how you're going to do it. And he said no. And, obviously we don't have to, get into all that. But, as soon as that was blown up, he said, all right, I'm done. I don't care anymore about the team, about the fans, whatever. I'm just going to spend as least amount of money as possible, stop trying to lose money, cut my losses and save as much money as I can. And that was his approach for too many years there. And that's why the Islanders were a laughingstock, a joke, a terrible team for, a good solid part of a decade. And, now obviously things are going to change. Things have been different the last couple of years only because we knew that there was going to be an ownership change. But yeah, they used to use phony bonuses, like these phantom bonuses to get to the cap floor, even though they weren't going to be paying them out. They traded for the corpse of Tim Thomas, even though he was not playing, just to get his cap hit. And we were given one of the most insulting and just ridiculous lines you'll ever hear was that what gives our team, this was from the GM, from Garth Snow, it gives our team flexibility, was the phrase he used after he traded for Tim Thomas, who never played a second for the Islanders, but they had his cap hit. So, yeah, they were a cap floor team for many years there. And now they're not going to be.
Because this guy is loaded. Hopefully
he's on a John Spano.
All right.
Next.
Okay. So look, there's not going to be a ton of stuff to update on the Islanders every week in the middle of July, but opening, we can start a countdown to opening night, which is when?
Well, it's delayed a little bit. Remember, the World Cup of Hockey will be taking place in September. Remember that. So the beginning of the NHL season is delayed slightly because of the World Cup of Hockey. And that'll
looks like the Islanders play at MSG on October 13th.
Okay.
That's the second day of the season and the first game for both the Rangers and Islanders.
And then I think the Islanders Islanders have their home opener on the 16th. That's a Sunday, I believe.
Indeed it is. They play the Capitol at Washington on Saturday. So not that we need to get into the strength of schedule in July. But
we should do a Mike Francesa. We should do a Mike and the Mad Dog. Win, win, loss, loss, win, win, loss. Actually, that'd be a lark if we did that. Not now, but maybe like in September or beginning of October.
Sure.
Part of a preview show. All right. We'll go through all 82 games. Win, win, loss, loss, win, 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 loss, loss, win. You can go, all right, Mike, okay, well, what about this game here? That's going to be a tough game, Mike. What do you think about that?
you want to just finish this yourself?
Well, I'm going to need you. If I'm going to play, Mike, then you have to play dog. Or we can reverse. I mean, if you think you can do it.
I think you just played both sides beautifully. I could just sit here and drink a beer that I'm going to talk about towards the end. All right, so let's move on here to a different sport, and we're going to talk about meet the Mets, meet the Mets.
Wait, the Mets,
step
who are they?
Right up and greet the Mets. Here comes the pitch, and the season's over.
Opening day, and here's the first pitch, and the season's over.
Well, the New York Mets were in the World Series last year, and
they play
now.
Baseball. That's right.
They sit. They are 6 games over .500, 50-44, 6.5 games behind Washington as of this very moment.
Oh, yeah, I guess Washington's still playing, right?
No, actually, it's over. It's 6.5 games back. They're a game behind Miami. So Miami's 51-43, coached by Don Mattingly this year. And Barry Bonds is a hitting coach there in Miami.
That's right.
So, throwing. So, the Mets, they had super crazy expectations going into the season, understandably so, coming off a disappointing World Series performance, but making it to the World Series in and of itself was an overachieving accomplishment for the Mets last year, as there was not similar expectations, but players like Noah Syndergaard coming onto the scene and being unbelievable, certainly helped propel them. And the acquisition of Yoenis last year again, and another, Yoenis and Noah Syndergaard, two huge proponents for that deep run. And so coming into this season, the Mets had what looked to be easily the best starting rotation in all of baseball. With pick your poison between Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom, Steven Matz, Bartolo Colon. I mean, look, Bartolo Colon's 43 years old, but he still has an ERA. This year it's under 3.5, even after getting shellacked today by a good offense. But the Mets, like last year, have faced some debilitating injuries. Offensively, this year, Lucas Duda, David Wright, two notable players with, David Wright didn't really do much last year either, but once again on the shelf for the majority of the season, Lucas Duda almost there now. Travis d'Arnaud missing a big portion of the year, their catcher. He's back playing, but seems like he can never stay healthy. So the Mets took an extreme move and signed Jose Reyes to help fill the void, who has had some serious off the field issues with domestic violence with his wife. His wife didn't testify, so he didn't get charged, but he got suspended by MLB anyway.
No, that didn't stop everybody from going, Jose, 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 Jose.
So it gets an ovation when he returns, which, you know, as a Mets fan, you want to clap for the guy because he's back, but he shoved his wife into a glass door or something hideous. And, you know, how can you celebrate? You know, you can't – how can you celebrate a player when a player does something like that? It's, you know, just inexcusable. But, look, he's here. And just to kind of give a state of the state here with the Mets, you know, as far as injuries go, you have huge Matt Harvey, thoracic outlet syndrome, same injury that Steven Stamkos had with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But
yeah, that is what he had, right?
Yeah, and now Matt Harvey had surgery. He's done for the year after a lackluster season. You know, this was supposed to be the big year, you know, the second year after returning from Tommy John. He's done. Really tumultuous career for Matt Harvey now when you think about it, with the ups and downs. So Noah Syndergaard with a bone spur in his elbow pitching, but, you know, is that elbow going to fall off at any moment? Steven Matz, the same exact ailment? A bone spur in his elbow?
Guy who's had Tommy John surgery before in Steven Matz.
And, you know, been struggling ever since the news surfaced of the bone spurs. Just not been the same pitcher, inconsistent. And so what does that leave you with? I mean, Bartolo Colon, who was an all-star.
The ageless wonder, Bartolo Colon, who I remember throwing in the playoffs against the Yankees.
43 years old, keeping his own. I mean, certainly the Mets, he eats the innings and he shows up every fifth day and swings the bat and his helmet falls off every time, which is great. Homered off James Shields earlier this year.
Which was one of the great moments in MLB history, according to Gary Cohen. Or was it Howie Rose? Was it Howie that said that? One of the great moments in Major League Baseball history.
One of the slowest home run trots in Major League Baseball history.
And they had to remind the San Diego pitcher, I don't know who it was, that he's not taunting him by running that slowly. He just can't move any faster than that.
No, like I said, it was James Shields.
Oh, right, Shields. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And anyway, now, which team is he on? Shields has been, like, traded two more times since then, right? Used to be Big Game James.
He was traded to the White Sox.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, didn't they cut him already because he's awful?
Did they cut him?
I don't know. Well, he's terrible. Oh, my God, is he awful.
Terrible. So, anyway. Look, the Mets have as far as offense goes, I would say they're going through – a similar scenario this year like they did last year.
Well, if I may, I want to give one stat when you say offense, and then I'll let you continue. One stat I want to throw out there. So right now the Mets are second in the National League in home runs. Second. You want to guess where they rank in total runs scored?
In the National League?
Yeah. So they're second in home runs.
There's 15 teams in the National League. Correct. I will guess they are – I won't go too extreme – because that's kind of cheating. I'll say they're 8th.
13th.
Wow.
13th in the National League in runs scored, yet they're 2nd in home runs. I think that says all you need to know about their offense.
That's pretty brutal.
That is an incredible stat.
Well, I think they have like an OPS I saw of like 651 with runners in scoring position this year, which if you take every batter that qualifies for the batting title, there's only like 5 that have an average that an OPS that low, which is on base percentage plus slugging. So they can't hit with runners in scoring position, which is leading to this anemic offense of they can't produce runs other than the home run. And you can't rely on the home run to be, you know, to have consistent success offensively. It's just not going to, especially against tougher pitching. It's just not going to work. You have to string together hits. Clearly the Mets are not doing that. And, you know, Yoenis Cespedes numbers wise is doing great. He's dealing with this quad ailment that, has been lingering. But this offense actually to me looks similar to last year. They had some pretty awful lineups for a while last year because of injuries. I think they can hold it together with the offense. They can rebound a bit. They're certainly capable. They have the talent. They have Reyes. They have Granderson. They have Neil Walker. They have, you know, Duda's going to come back, hopefully. But they have Cespedes. Asdrubal Cabrera is not bad. James Loney is actually doing okay for what you would expect of James Loney.
Well, one thing about Cabrera, just a stat about Cabrera, apparently he has not had a hit with a runner in scoring position in 2 months. I think it's May 23rd is the last time he had a hit with the runner in scoring position. So everything you hear about Cabrera, what a professional hitter he is. Oh, you know, that's definitely a professional. That screams veteran professional
maybe,
hitter.
Okay, that sounds bad. But just to confirm the strength of your point, what we'd want to know is how many opportunities has he had?
I think it's sure 28 it's or 29. I think I saw it today.
Like 0 for 29?
Something like that, yeah. I actually would have been worse, you know, the 2 months, but that's still pretty terrible.
So his batting average per balls in play is zero for that period, for that stretch.
I guess he's just unlucky. And how about Granderson? Another, I just like looking at these stats for the Mets. 16 home runs. How many RBIs do you think Granderson has? He has 16 home runs.
I mean, he's been leading off, so, you know.
Fair.
You can't.
He also has a grand.
But still.
He has 29 RBIs and 16 home runs. 29 RBIs.
Ugh, that's gross. No, that's pretty gross.
And he has a grand slam this year, I think.
That's gross.
Oh, it is.
You know what? That all being said, I don't think offense is going to be the problem for the Mets for the rest of the season.
Well, they're going to have to piece it together. I mean, that's what they're going to have to do.
It's the pitch. I think it's the pitching. That
I agree. They need a starting pitcher. They have to trade for a starting pitcher. I don't think there's any way around it.
It's crazy that we're saying this about the Mets, considering what we said, what people were saying, and I think we would both agree at the beginning of the year that they had the best starting rotation in all of baseball.
Definitely.
And now they have, you know, Logan Verrett, right? Who they're using as who's really a long man.
Been okay. I mean, I guess hasn't been terrible. He's been okay.
But you know what? If you're gonna compete with the Chicagos and the Miamis and not really Miami as much, but with the Nationals,
they are competing with Miami. Giants. Miami's right there.
I mean, they have to, right? But if you want to make a series, you know, if you want to be a World Series contender, first of all, Syndergaard, Mets, and DeGrom's been great. You know, actually, at the beginning of the year, I think there were more question marks surrounding DeGrom.
Syndergaard,
and Mets. Right, and it's completely flipped. His velocity has slowly crept up throughout the year, and he's as good as he was last year, maybe better.
Syndergaard.
I think Syndergaard, you know, like he pitched yesterday and they took him out in the sixth,
They're going to be careful with him. I mean,
they're going to be very careful with him. Yeah. So, you know,
they need him. They desperately need him. Yes, if they think that they're contenders this year, he has to be your front line. So, I mean, him and DeGrom, I mean, those are your two guys that you're going to be relying very heavily on.
The velocity was there last night. He was touching 100 like he normally does. So that's a good sign. But they're going to baby him, so that puts more onus on the bullpen. And look, Colon, you expect to just keep you in games, but the problem with that is, you know, with the Mets' offense, it may not be good enough. So, and Steven Matz, you don't know where you're going to get recently. So they certainly have their issues on the pitching side.
Look, he may end up being shut down.
Meanwhile, Jerry's Familia. My God. I mean, like last night's outing was
a Houdini act.
The epitome of like how this guy has been able to get so many consecutive saves.
If you remember David Robertson for the Yankees, that was like his trademark was get like guys on base and then somehow, you know, just get out of jams like that. Strike guys out, get out of jams. I mean, that's what Familia has done. And he's been very, really good. I mean, he hasn't blown a save this year, right? I think he's still perfect, isn't he?
Yep, 32, I think, in a row. Going back to last year, it's like 48. Do you know off the top of your head who holds the Major League record for most consecutive saves? They said it on the broadcast last night. So,
Is it Eric Gagne?
It is.
Is it really? I swear I didn't look it up. I just remember he had those couple absurd seasons with the Dodgers back in the day.
So how many do you think it was?
I would guess probably like, if I had to guess an exact number, I would say 63.
88.
Oh, okay.
which is insane.
That's so
Familia is more than halfway there, but you know, the way that you if you watch last night's outing, there's no way he's ever going to get there.
No.
But somehow, bases loaded, nobody out, and the Cubs can't play to runner. And, you know, Jose Reyes made a stupid play in the field, picking
up shock.
a bunt that was going foul that he picked up and threw to first and didn't retire the runner. That's the play that loaded the bases. If he had let it go, it would still have been first and second, with the batter still up. Nevertheless, it worked out. Familia on the back end, and Addison Russell's held his own this year for them. With the Mets, you're going to have this dark cloud hanging over this pitching staff. Unless they go out and get somebody that they can count on six innings, you know, quality starts, it's going to be a problem the rest of the way, babying some of, you know, between Mats and Syndergaard. And then who's the fifth starter? I mean, they were hoping Zach Wheeler would come back at some point.
But who knows? They haven't. They've been so.
He's had setbacks. Rafael Montero was another guy that showed promise in their system. And
whatever happened to him?
I think he's still down. I think he's just trying to work their way back from injuries. So there's potential depth, but injuries have been greater than the depth that they need. I've kind of dominated this discussion about the Mets.
Well, I've got a few things to get your word in, though. Well, I think what Met fans can take solace in is the fact that their schedule down the stretch is not that bad. I mean, you know, they have I'm just looking at it right now. You know, they have a series with the Marlins after they finished their series with the Cubs today. Three big games. Then they play three against St. Louis. But then, you know, four against Colorado. And then they have a series with the Yankees and Tigers. But then Arizona, San Diego at home, and then they go take a West Coast trip, which is never easy, but still Arizona. Four with San Francisco, okay, not easy. But then, you know, they play a bunch of games with Philadelphia and then Cincinnati. They play games still against Atlanta, Minnesota. They only play six more with Washington. I mean, I don't think the Mets are winning this division. I think this is Washington's division now to lose. I would be surprised if Washington does not win this division. I know they fell apart last year. I don't think it's going to happen again. I think they're better this year. They have a better manager this year. I think Washington is definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with in this second half of the season and, you know, in the National League and
especially because they have that net negative in the middle of their lineup.
Are you contradicting my point? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm.
Oh wait, is that a nickname for somebody? Oh, I know. Oh, okay. Yes, you mean the guy that Mr. Gary Cohen called a net negative. That's right. Yeah, well, ask Gary Cohen if what he thinks of that. I mean, granted, Mr. Daniel Murphy, of course, who you're referring to there, is having an absolutely out of his mind, insane, just ridiculous, incredible season coming off of his out of his mind, incredible playoffs that he had for the Mets last year.
He's continued hitting like he did in the playoffs. I mean, obviously not the home runs per at bat pace, but I mean, otherwise, I think he's currently in the National League lead in batting average .352. Hits, here we go. Hits, doubles, batting average, OPS, and total bases. He's leading the league. I mean,
pretty amazing. I mean, you know, Daniel Murphy was always a guy that was a solid hitter, you know, didn't strike out a lot, but, you know, never demonstrated like this kind of power ever. You know, he was not a good base runner, a terrible fielder.
He's slugging .613. He's never slugged above .449. In 49 games as a rookie for the Mets, he slugged .473. That was the highest slugging percentage he ever finished the season with. And now he's at .613.
So what do you think? He's on steroids? Is that what you're saying? he's on the juice?
This dude made some approach shift at the plate, and everything he hits, he just hits it hard. He just puts the barrel on the bat, and you know what? The barrel on the ball, and he just has that approach to the plate where he goes with the pitch. If it's down and in, he's pulling it. If it's away, you know, low and away, he's going the other way. And he just has that. Something clicked last year, late last year, and the Mets did not think that he would keep that up. And to this point, they've been wrong. That, you know, November to March break didn't really happen for Daniel Murthy. It's essentially continued. It's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, you know, I can laugh. I'm not a Met fan, so I can kind of laugh at it. Like, oh, and he's tortured the Mets this year in the games they played against Washington. And, you know, Neil Walker, he's done, you know, an okay job. You know, he hit 9 home runs, it seemed like, in the first couple of weeks. And since then, he's hit, like, what, like 4 or 5? So, you know, he's cooled off significantly. I mean, you ask Met fans who they'd rather have right now. It'd be crazy not to say Daniel Murphy. But, you know, the Mets made a decision. They said, hey, you know, we of course, acknowledge the fact that he had a tremendous postseason. He is a good hitter. It's just that they looked at him as a guy without a position, you know, especially in the National League where you don't have a DH. They just did not like him at second base. They felt they had to upgrade that position in terms of, you know, defensively, and, you know, they felt like they can, you know, live without him and move on. And I can't necessarily fault Sandy and the Mets for letting him go. Is it painful for Met fans to watch him do this, especially for a division rival? Absolutely. And to see him torture you, in 18, 19 games a year now, it seems like he's going to do. I mean, it's a very tough pill to swallow for Met fans. So I can, you know, have a little fun at Met fans' expense, but at the same time, you can empathize with their pain, because it has got to be very, very rough to watch this take place this year.
But the National signed him for three years, $37.5 million.
That's right. They didn't give him a fourth year, huh? Wow, I forgot that. Wow, amazing. What a return on their investment. Even if he doesn't do anything the next 2 years, if he continues the season that he has, and then maybe, you know, helps them go on a playoff run or something, it will be his, you know, worth the weight in gold. I mean, just what the season that he's having this year.
It's his age 31 year. If, you know, he should keep it, he should relatively keep the type of hitter that he is. You'd think he could keep it up, like, because he's more of a, you know, he just hits the ball hard. He's not like, you know, just like a guy that's all or nothing. He has 27 doubles. I mean, he's always been a doubles hitter. Like,
but that's
something that has
singles and doubles. That was it. Never home runs.
Right. And look, he's already. He doesn't walk. But that hasn't changed. He struck out a little bit more this year, but. Nothing crazy. And he's 4 home runs more than he's ever hit in a season now. He's at 18. And, man, he had such a dramatic home run a couple nights ago. Didn't start. It was the bottom of the top or bottom of the ninth. I think it was Sunday. And he came on, and they were down a run, 2 outs, bottom of the ninth, pinch hit. Home run off of the closer for the Pirates. And I think that ended up being the 18-inning game that they played on Sunday. But Daniel Murphy just, you know, they're clutch hits too. It's not just like, you know, fill in the stat sheet and, you know, you see players that, you know, that they get this reputation for being, you know, the stat sheet gets filled, but they don't get clutch hits. Daniel Murphy, wow, just – we went on a Daniel Murphy thread. Didn't expect it to happen, but –
net negative, Mr. Yeah. Net negative, according to Aaron Cohen.
Oh, God. Well, nobody saw this coming. I mean, nobody saw him continuing that pace. They just thought it was a magical, you know, 3-week run in October. But
yeah, but okay, now the question is, what next for the Mets?
What's next for the Mets? Yeah, I mean,
10 days of trade deadline. I mean, what starting pitchers are out there that they may have interest that they may
see that I don't know in. I'm not sure who's even,
I mean,
out
really
there.
No frontline starting pitchers out there. You don't have a David Price out there like last year. I mean, you know, who, or Cole Hamels, I mean, who are the Mets like legitimately going to bring in? Are you be bringing in like a back of the rotation type of guy that you hope can give you some innings? That's what the Mets that's the best that anybody can do, I think. I unless something changes, I haven't heard about any frontline starting pitcher that's available. So it's kind of slim pickings, unless they want Nathan Eovaldi. The Mets want Nathan Eovaldi.
You know, they could trade a guy with theoretical upside, like a guy on Tampa. You know, like Drew Smiley. Or Drew Smyly, though, has like one of the highest ERAs of pitchers with at least 90 innings this year. I think 90 innings pitched. It's been unbelievable how bad he's been the last few months. And I'm going to talk about another pitcher with a very high ERA whose peripherals don't indicate. Like, Drew Smyly is a guy that is pitches his he strikes out a lot of batters. He doesn't walk a lot of batters, but you look at his
really how's his ERA, so
home runs, mistake pitches, and he just gets. Drew Smyly is a left-handed pitcher with a fastball that tops at 92. He has a very good curveball, and I think he also throws a changeup and a slider. The problem is, when he makes mistakes in the middle of the zone, they get crushed.
But don't those stat guys love the K to walk, that great K to walk ratio though? They see
so
that.
So
the
question is, Sandy Alderson like that? Drew Smyly is 2-11 on the season. Wow. 2-11. That is just awful. Record-wise, you know, you don't really look at the record. Isn't the first thing you're supposed to look at when you're evaluating a pitcher, but he's already allowed. He allows 1.8 home runs per nine innings on the season. That's just, I mean, that's last year was 1.5, which is still pretty high. But that, I mean, that's just.
So is his name out there? I haven't seen his name on the rumor mill list. Is that somebody who's been mentioned?
I've seen headlines indicating that that teams are looking at the Rays starting pitchers. I don't know about Chris Archer. He's their frontline guy.
I can't imagine them trading him. I mean, even if
they have this rookie Blake Snell, who actually pitched really well today. Who they are really high on. I think
they're like cost control guys. If they have like a guy that they like that's cost control, they're not going to trade him. If they have a guy
Drew
that's
Smyly
making money, don't trade
is, him. Drew Smyly is 27 years old. He's on a 1-year deal, only making $3.75 million. There's really no risk in trying to get this guy. Actually, the risk is quite small. He does have a big injury history, Drew Smyly. His ERA is 5.64. He's allowed 21 home runs already this year. In 105 innings. It's just, but here you go. 105 innings pitched, 111 strikeouts, and 29 walks. 2.5 walks per nine. I mean,
that's pretty good.
Those are good peripherals.
That's really good, actually.
Killing this guy. And we're going to be saying something very similar about another pitcher shortly, but this is a guy that, I've watched a lot of his starts this year, actually. And
why is that, pray tell?
There's a start that he had against the Red Sox earlier in this year, like 8 shutout innings, 13 strikeouts, just they couldn't touch him. But some pitchers, they could get away with mistakes on occasion. And this year, this guy, Drew Smyly, when he makes a mistake, he can't get away with it. Anyway. We'll see, you know, look, we'll see what they do. And
concludes the Drew Smyly analysis for those GMs out there listening.
That's right, all those scouts that,
I wonder if Sandy was taking notes there. Ooh, that's a pretty good K to walk ratio. Those home runs scare me though. I don't know.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
All right.
So let's move on to the Yankees. Let's talk about them for a little bit.
Oh yeah. The other New York baseball team.
That's right.
The other mediocre New York baseball team.
Yeah, and man, I mean, this team, I think, actually has a much tougher route to the playoffs. You know, the Orioles and Red Sox are doing really well, and then the Blue Jays are doing pretty well too. They're all in the hunt there for first place. So, you know, the Yankees, I think, you know, they're hovering around 500. I think that's okay, given you take a look at this roster that they have, and you'd say, all right, well, that's probably where you'd expect them to be.
Well, the Yankees win again tonight. Pineda throws a shutout. Well, I don't know how many innings he pitched, but they won 5-0. Okay, so now they are two games over 500. So if you ask the Yankee brass, if you ask the Steinbrenners and Randy Levine and Lon Trost, they would have you think that the Yankees are World Series bound. Oh, we won four games in a row. We're headed to the World Series. Just put us there now. Just cancel the rest of the season. You know, we're buying. We're going to be buyers now. We're making the playoffs. We're headed to the World Series. We're the New York Yankees, right? Wrong. Just in case there was any false hope that was obtained, from watching the Yankees over the last four games and, however long you want to extend back to. The Yankees are a mediocre baseball team. I don't care what they, yes, they've won a few games. It was nice that they won a few games. They have to trade Chapman and Beltran. There's no debate. There's no discussion. If they don't, it's irresponsible, and it would be all on the owner, because I can guarantee you that Brian Cashman wants to trade the two of them, because there's, again, no reason not to when you can bring back some big prospects. This is a mediocre baseball team with bad starting pitching other than Tanaka, and I'd say below average starting pitching, because their lineup is terrible. Their lineup is really bad, and with three great relief pitchers. So that's what the team is.
So Chapman is a free agent at the end of the year.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Chapman, man, I think he threw the five hardest pitches ever recorded in the StatCast history. StatCast is like this relatively new technology that tracks velocity on pitches and batted balls. And Chapman, when he last pitched, was it yesterday, the day before? He like topped 104 or something absurd. The dude threw the four or five hardest pitches ever recorded.
Looks pretty cool, right? you see that radar gun explode and you go, yay! But
I mean, and the numbers back up. I mean, he's good.
I'm not saying you wouldn't want him, but he's a free agent. Why are you keeping him? There's no reason to have him on the team. Because you're going to.
He is. He's 28. Yeah, I mean, look, it was nice to have the Betances, Miller, Chapman trio that kind of bridged the gap, and I think their record would be a lot worse if they didn't have these guys to dominate the last three innings of games to make up for their lack of starting pitching. But
even if their starting pitching was halfway decent, just give us five innings. Well, and we'll figure out the sixth, or we can maybe have extend one of our pitchers more than an inning. Oh, what a concept! I know, but this team right now, their starting pitching is below average at best, and I don't care if they make the playoffs. If they happen to go on this miraculous run, they'll get to the playoffs then for 2.5 hours like last year. They'll run into a big starting pitcher. And that'll be it. And
there's so many teams between the Yankees and
right. And there's that too. Yeah.
It's just, I don't see it. I think they, Beltran,
there's
Carlos
eight
Beltran.
Teams, like buying for two spots, essentially. Eight teams.
Let's give Carlos Beltran credit.
Oh, he's had a great year. Tremendous year.
I don't know if this is free agency motivated, but 39 years old and he's slugging .544 through and hitting .300 through 88 games, 19 home runs, 58 RBIs. I mean, that dude maybe just wrote his ticket to the Hall of Fame. And we'd have to look at the numbers more closely to see, but I mean, just talk about an age 39 year, pretty incredible on his part. What he's done, being really the only consistent power force in that lineup. I mean, you have McCann, who's been okay. And then, Teixeira has been hurt. Surprise, surprise. A-Rod.
Year for Teixeira and A-Rod, of course.
Yeah, A-Rod just is done.
I mean, they're just two players that are just completely broken down and done. I mean, Teixeira
and A-Rod. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but, I mean, not surprising. And so that guy has been carrying the load here. I think it would look Beltran recently in a few last years, he's been on and off the field battle, with some ailments. I think you had, especially Beltran has to go. I think especially him.
No reason not to. Just a guy that, there's no reason to have on the team, free agent. He can obviously contribute to a contending team, in the American League, not the National League. He can't go to a National League team and, can't play the field. So he's going to have to, be a part-time, right fielder/DH for an American League team. But I'm sure you can get something decent in return for him. So honestly, there's no reason. Again, it'd be irresponsible for the Yankees not to trade Beltran and Chapman because they're, again, not going anywhere. You can get a pretty good haul, I would think, back for both of them. They can even explore trading Miller, whose name has been out there, even though I don't think they will trade him. You can say that there's really very few players on this team that are untouchable right now. I mean, nobody's going to take A-Rod or Teixeira. We know that. Nobody's taking Ellsbury and that contract. We know that. McCann, you want to say, you can throw him out there and see if you get any bites and maybe just to get his salary off the team, maybe. You have a couple guys right now that you're building around. You're building around Gregorius. I guess maybe Castro. But in terms of everyday players, it's pretty slim. You have a couple prospects in the minors. Bird, who got hurt, who came up last year at a really good stint with them last year, got hurt, out for the year this year. Hopefully comes back healthy. They have that guy Judge, who I guess just got hurt also. They have a few other guys that they like. Let's see what they can do. Bring them up. Let's see what they can do. Stop with this, charade about, oh, we're contenders. We're going to make a run at it. We're going to be buyers at the deadline. And, we're the Yankees. We can never concede defeat. And, we have to make as much money as we can. And we're not going to have people in the ballpark if we trade off our players. Blah, blah. You know what? Let the GM do his job. Like I complimented Ledecky earlier today, right? I said he has said he's going to stay out of hockey operations. It's time that the Steinbrenners and Lon Trost and their brain trust of Randy Levine and the Tampa contingent stay out of it and let the GM, Cashman, do his job, who I know I can say with almost certainty that he would trade both Chapman and Beltran and maybe a few other players tomorrow. But he can't because of the stupid SOBs that own the Yankees that want to make sure that they cash in wherever they can and make as much and make every last dime that they can. And anyway,
it's not like they learned it from their dad or anything. but look, D.D. Gregorius, let's just, highlight a positive here. This dude slugged only .370 last year. Didn't really show any offensive capability at all. And really is broken out essentially. And I think, like you said, the first player you named for the future of this team, you said D.D. Gregorius.
He's one of the few guys you can actually build around. He's a legit shortstop.
Right. But you couldn't say that beginning of the season, but he's really proven himself, I think, and it's been sustained. And, I think that there's more upside to this guy. So he's a good, he's a solid player with a lot of potential. And so it is someone to build around, certainly, and so we'll see what Cashman's able to cash in on within the next 10 days. I just want to make a note. You said struggling starting pitching. Tanaka's been actually okay. He's not bad. He hasn't been dominant,
he's been pretty good. He's had a good year. Yeah. Not great, pretty good.
Came into the year with the partially torn elbow and still pitching with a partially torn elbow. A ligament in an elbow, and it's not unprecedented, but usually it's the writing is on the wall for having to get the reconstructive surgery, but not yet. It's kept together. Michael Pineda. Now here's a guy on the year whose ERA tonight, you mentioned earlier, the Orioles were shut out, six innings, Michael Pineda. He hasn't, as far as I recall, he hasn't missed any starts this year. So he's probably had now 15, 16 starts or so. His ERA sits at 5.25 on the season, even after tonight.
Similar problem a lot worse. To Drew Smiley, right?
125 to 27 K to walk ratio for Michael Pineda.
Pretty good.
Yes, that's as good as it gets. That's a pretty good. Well, I'm sorry, Clayton Kershaw. Hope he recovers, but he's had the most ridiculous K to walk ratio in MLB history this year. But what I want to actually know is how many. So Michael Pineda is a right-handed. To me, he's almost like a right-handed version of Drew Smiley this year, because Michael Pineda, when he hangs that slider in the zone, it gets hammered. Michael Pineda this year has surrendered 18 home runs in 100 innings. So that's 1.6 home runs per 9 innings. Last year, in 160 innings, he surrendered 21 home runs. So he's only 3 off. I mean, again, he's at the top of the league in strikeouts per 9, 10.7.
We know he's got great stuff. He has really good stuff.
He has a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. He has a great slider, and he's had these problems so many times where he gets the first two batters out, and then he has this inning where he ends up letting like 5 straight base runners, and it just snowballs. Sometimes they're just like unlucky hits. Sometimes he walks batters. Sometimes he hits batters, and he can't put out the fire.
Part of pitching. I mean, it's not something that you can really quantify, but you think about like just how big a part of being a great starting pitcher, a consistently good starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, it requires you to have to learn how to get out of innings and pitch with runners on base. And something that he has just really struggled with and has really never learned how to do it.
I'd like to see the before and after stats. I'm sure we're not the first to look at it. Since the Pine Tar incident from Michael Pineda.
Oh, yeah, the Pine Tar incident.
Now, that was maybe 2014.
Yeah, that was a couple years ago, I think. Yeah, I think so.
But since then, his numbers have not been the same. And, you know, just a little conspiracy.
So that they figured him out? So he was pulling like a Gaylord Perry or
this is a guy with good stuff. You know, another guy that has good stuff but is even worse, and look, he's younger, Luis Severino. Here's a guy that was just beyond disastrous the beginning of this year, and I guess he's still pitching in AAA right now. They demoted him within the first couple months. Really high hopes for Severino coming into the year, and he didn't obviously pan out. And so they had Nova fill in, basically, you know, hang on. They had Evaldi, who throws out of the bullpen. He throws 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. When he's a starter, he throws 97, but it's too straight, and he gets hammered. This rotation after Tanaka, and I guess Tanaka is your, you know, starter for game one in the playoffs. If, you know, not that the Yankees are going to be there this year in all likelihood, but. Just to show, like, who's starting game two for the Yankees in a playoff series?
I guess CeCe Sabathia. The ageless wonder CeCe Sabathia, the former alcoholic CeCe Sabathia.
Thank you for bringing him up. I mean, when you look at what he has –
Who's actually had an okay year. He struggled lately, but got off to halfway. More than really what you could have expected, I would say, right?
Yes. Coming into the year, there was not
much – doctrine in effect for him.
On and off the field issues for CC the last few years, but kind of reinvented the wheel, throwing more cutters, becoming more of a pitcher than a thrower, and which he really doesn't have a choice. But some guys, they never figure that portion out, and they just exit the league. CC's held on and given the Yankees some innings and some length, so give him credit for that much. But yeah, I mean, you don't feel too excited watching this team. I mean, I think that's...
Oh, nothing exciting about this team at all. You get excited when you see the bullpen. That's when you get excited, when you see Betances, right. Miller, and Chapman. That's your excitement. When we have a two-run lead or a 1-2-run lead, here come the big three. Now I'm excited. Now I get that is really all you have to look forward to as a Yankee fan, really the whole year. And Beltran to an extent also.
There's
your team.
The Mets, comparing the two... The Mets actually, I think, are positioned a little more favorably.
Oh, much better shape. Much better shape.
To make a run this year, but they do have issues, and there are a couple of teams in particular that are much better than them. You know, the Nationals and the Cubs are the cream of the crop in the NL, and I think we're going to see a an NLCS between those two teams, unless you know. One just gets cold, and these 5-game playoff series first rounds I don't like, because I just think it's a short series, and you know a team could just get hot in a short series, and you know you get knocked off before you even get started. But that aside, I see, you know, it's pretty clear it's going to look like to be those are the two favorites. With you know, the Giants are hanging around as another really formidable team, but I just don't know if they I don't know if they could keep it together. I mean, you got to, you know, they do have two very good, I mean, two aces really on that squad. So that could keep them. I think that's going to keep them strongly in the mix. But there's your baseball New York baseball recap from Hip and the Lip.
Yes. Tell us if you actually think that we know anything about baseball or if we just were making it up as we go along. But you know what? I answered the Eric Gagne question. I think that by me answering, getting that trivia question correct without looking it up, I think that would quell any concerns that anybody would have that that we don't know anything about baseball, at least me. The encyclopedionic lip.
So I'm going to take 2 minutes to do the beer of the week.
The hipster beer of the week.
So this is a beer that I tried for the first time. When did I try it? Like 5 days ago for the first time I tried it.
All right.
And it was one of the best beers I've ever had.
Ooh. And pray tell, what beer would this be?
Now you got to keep in mind what the style is, and this is not a style that's for everyone. So I'm not saying every person listening should make sure that they try this beer at some point in their life.
Does the beer have sea salt in it?
I don't know. So this is from a brewery that's in New Jersey called Carton Brewing.
Like Craig Carton Brewing?
As in the spelling, yes. I think the commonalities end there. This is a small brewery that is extremely popular and extremely limited in that you can't find cans of this beer in stores unless you are like extremely lucky. Like think about, you know, chasing like a starting lineup figure that was one in a box, and you know that the store, the Toys R Us store, got, you know, one case once the whole year, and you just happen to walk in at the right time because they sell out immediately. This brewery in general, the apparently they're expanding, so I hear, but it's not even through a primary source. You got to go to the brewery to get their cans unless you just get lucky.
So kind of like Bartolo Colon running into a James Shields fastball, lucky like that.
Sure. Now, what is more readily available is their stuff on tap. You could get it in growlers at various liquor stores in New Jersey, and it is on tap in some New York City restaurants as well, and New Jersey. In fact, it just got on tap at a bar that you and I frequented a week ago, where we enjoyed a couple of craft beers ourselves. They now have this particular beer on tap. And it is called Monkey Chased the Weasel. That is the name of the beer. It is labeled a mulberry sour ale on the can, which I don't think is even available for purchase at the moment. You can go to the brewery itself and drink it. Actually, I think they announced that this week it's not even available at the brewery. I think the other beers are. But I actually got a growler of it today myself at a By Right is like a chain of it's the chain of liquor stores in New Jersey, but they're franchises. So the different, you know, offerings at these By Rights, which liquor, beer, and wine. New Jersey's not like New York. New Jersey, they have to sell the liquor, beer, and wine in like their individual stores. You don't see that in supermarkets in New Jersey.
Yeah, well, that stinks. That sounds pretty H though. Monkey chase the weasel.
So I didn't say what type. I said mulberry sour ale. You know, it's on some websites. It's described as a Berliner Weiss, which is like a tart wheat beer. So it kind of has all those elements to it. It's partially wheat beer, partially sour, partially tart, which is really my kind of style. It's a light beer. It's 3.9%. It's not really one that's going to, you know, you'd have to have way too many of them to get pretty lit up off of it. It's just a good, refreshing, very, very good tasting beer. If you're in the New York City area, you could certainly track it down at a bar. a few bars. You can't just walk into a random bar and think you'll find it, but if you do your homework, and I recommend beermenus.com as a site, and this is, you know, me going up, I'm offering more competition to get this beer, because the more people that know about beer menus, the more people that can get it, get the beer that I'm chasing after. But it is very valuable. If there's a beer that you like and you don't know where to get it, you search the beer, you then put in your location, and it's going to, all these restaurants and bars and supermarkets and beer stores, they update their inventory on this website, Beer Menus. Not everyone, obviously, but a lot of them do. And so it'll list in, you know, order of distance from your location where you can get it.
They're so
very good. Like, if there's a particular beer that you want. So, you know, so I recommend checking that out. So that's your beer of the week. Monk, I'm looking forward to getting into that growler at some point that's hanging out in the fridge, as it's just
fermenting.
It's just that good. So that gives you our, you know, the episode, I think, went about as long as our typical episode here. I thought it was going to go shorter, but
despite the lack of Islanders and hockey, it still went as long as it did.
This is what we do, and you know, I'm looking forward to maybe getting into some NFL next week. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be a topic of conversation. Will he be on the Jets? Will he not be on the Jets? I'm looking forward to that discussion, regardless of what the outcome is in a week's time. And and some Giants. I think we should talk a little bit about the draft picks that for each team and the free agent acquisitions. And, you know, the camps are underway. And, you know, we're less than a month away from preseason NFL and less than 2 months away from, you know, opening kickoff. So the NFL is coming right back.
Yes, it is. Another NFL season upon us. The MLB trade deadline upon us as well in 10 days, or I guess 11, the 31st, right? Yeah, so, So we'll be previewing that. Some football. If there's any Islander development, we'll, of course, have to throw that in there. I'd be shocked if there is. But, hey, if there is, we'll have to discuss it. Rangers made a trade. The Rangers brought in a new player, traded out a productive player for them, brought in a new guy. So, hey, how about that? And that's it on the hockey front, and really on the baseball front. I think we covered a lot of ground here today. All right.
Well, all right. Bye.
All right. Next.
Good chat, and we will see you next time here from Hip and the Lib.
Yes.
All right. Bye. All right. Bye. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.